Okay, I guess I should thank the organizer for asking me to speak. So this is a geometry, topology, and a physics seminar. I think we will have some general talks, but if you count my talk today, so there will be 5 talks on this specific topic, which is 3D quantum gravity. So I should first say, I don't know anything about quantum gravity, but I want to learn them. So I will mainly explain the kind of reasons why we should be interested in quantum gravity in 3D, and also the papers we will go through. And I hope everything will be elementary, so that because I really just want to learn things. So there are, besides my talk, so there will be a talk on the equivalence and partial correspondence of 3D gravity with Chern-Simon gauge theory. So I don't think Witten is the first one, but he made it famous in 1988 due to Edward Witten. And there are exactly references on Dave's website. Now in retrospect, I believe this probably really helped him to write the famous 1989 paper, which is using Chern-Simon theory to explain Jones polynomial. So we already have a volunteer to talk about this paper, which will be next Friday. And there's a second important result, which is so-called BTC black hole. And we don't have a taker for this one, so we need a volunteer. I don't know how to pronounce their name, but the reference exactly also on the website. So this is 1993. I will say a few words. The third paper result is basically ES3 and a CFT correspondence. This is a mathematical theory due to Brown, and I don't know how to pronounce the other guy's name. So this is a paper in 1986. This one already dropped somebody, which is another speaker for this this paper, which is Jianming Chao.
He's a physicist.
So he did his PhD in Stanford with Xiaoliang Qi, and we both want to hire him. Stephen Qi and the KITP both want to hire him, so we had a joint offer. So the first year KITP, the second year Stephen Qi. I don't know the third year. So he's a pretty hard guy, theoretical quantum metaphysicist. And then there's a fourth talk on 24th, Alex Kitayev. So he will talk, now it's very famous, called SYK model. This stands for Sudhir Sanchev at Harvard, and then Ye Jung Ru, I think, and then this is Kitayev. It's almost like here. It's a toy model. It's not real, the 4D quantum gravity, but has a lot to do with the real 4D quantum gravity. And then on the ninth, there's a talk by my colleague, Matt Hastings. So he will talk about quantum error correction code. It's not really quantum gravity, but this is a big thing right now, which is related to quantum gravity. Basically, I don't know, I believe or not, the propaganda is space-time, just a quantum error correction code. So that's the rough line of all the talks. I think we have some other probably talks will be not exact on this topic, but this will be, the 5 talks will be.
And then you're gonna do a volume conjecture talk too?
If we have time, I will. But I will do today quite a bit already.
Okay.
So, Okay, so that's basically the Porter. I just say a few words. I'm not an expert on quantum gravity, but I'm interested. First, it's not the real quantum gravity. It's 3D, not 4D. The real world is 4D. And secondly, I will be interested in something called the negative cosmological constant, which means the vacuum of the universe is negative energy. That's not true either. The real world is positive energy. And third, there's something else which is also not real, which is I will talk about anti-de Sitter space. And the real world is supposed to be de Sitter. So you can see everything's not real. But this is the thing which mathematically I think is interesting. So that's we are mathematicians. Okay, so that's basically for the organization. And we do need a volunteer to talk about these black holes. I hope somebody can give an introduction to the black hole physics with basic examples. Probably that's the best hope to understand black hole analytically. The four dimension, I think, probably is impossible. We can never say anything impossible, but probably it's too hard. Any questions before I start to kind of really talk on this? Okay, so then we really kind of explain why this should be interesting. So I think the famous Einstein action. General relativity is that you take a three manifolds, which is considered space-time, and then you take a metric, which is called this a gravitational field, I didn't really specify the signature, let's not worry about that, because what I'm talking about is so general, it doesn't really matter. And then the famous action is that's the famous Einstein action. That's the scalar curvature. That's the famous Einstein mistake, the so-called cosmological constant. So just shifting a little bit. And then if you do variation, you get the famous Einstein equation. Without the energy momentum tensor. Just want to check my signs are right. Think so. So this without, so that means the universe has no matters. So that's the T vanish. Otherwise there's a T here on the other side, which means you have some matters. So that's the Einstein field equation. And then the game is to solve this equation. So you want to find a metric so that the Ricci curvature minus half of the scalar curvature, the metric, the constant metric equals zero. And this is a very difficult job. If you know history, that actually, I think at the Institute, Goethe was so depressed, Einstein wanted to make him happier, so Einstein tried to explain to him, solve this equation. And Goethe was really great, he found a solution. And the Einstein said, oh, I forgot to tell you that solution is illegal because the solution has to be asymptotic Euclidean at infinity. So Goethe has his own universe, but it's illegal in the sense of it's not asymptotic flat. So, but there's an easy one. If you do so in three dimensions, there is a famous anti-de Sitter solution. I was just looking at anti-de Sitter space, I realized actually you have to know the right person. So actually he worked with Einstein before, so that's why he went to this thing. So he designed this solution, which is the following. So as I said, I want to be really elementary, so let me, I don't even know, I just learned the last few days. So the anti-de Sitter space. So this is, I'm talking about 3D. So this is the inside, and then inside R4. We can write down what you call
together.
The sign right. So this is a sub-manifold of R4, defined by this equation. And then write out the metric, just the same thing. And then the claim is this metric provide a solution to Einstein's equation. Okay. And of course, it means that you take this submanifold and then this restrict on that as an induced metric. And the induced metric give you a solution of the Einstein equation. So let me just write down why this is true, just quickly. I was planning to compute, but I didn't have time to check. But just quickly write down. So the Ricci curvature, if you just compute, this is not a post-definite metric. This is a Lorentzian metric. So it's real physics. So this is a minus 2 L squared. And then the metric. And the scalar curvature is minus 6 over L squared. And I think I forgot something very important. So lambda is negative 1 over L squared. And that's why it's called the negative cosmological constant. So my lambda is this guy, it's negative. And then if you write it, it's really R plus 2 over L squared. Okay. This is unrealistic because it's supposed to be the average density of the energy of your vacuum. And we don't believe vacuum can have negative energy. So that's why it's unrealistic. Who knows? So that's actually, I did actually. If you just plug in those numbers in here, that's indeed a solution. Okay. So therefore, you do have a solution of Einstein equation, which is the anti-de Sitter space, and that's considered to be the vacuum. So that's basically the anti-de Sitter space is a solution. And now let's think about this space, because it's supposed to be something very important. So first, as a topologist, we want to see how this looks like topologically, which means you're in the space. And that's actually fairly easy to understand. So this anti-de Sitter space topologically. Anybody know the answer? It's very obvious, actually. Of course, Dave shouldn't say he knows. So the topological space, as a topological space, it's just S1 cross RT. Now that's very easy to see because you can choose x1, x2 arbitrarily. That's completely arbitrary. And then once you fix this, you get this summation xj squared 3/4 equals. No, I got it wrong. I should do 3/4, sorry. I change the sign. If I fix 3/4, okay, this two fixed. And then I will get the equation, which is else. I'm confused. Which side?
Yeah, it's right. You put the other side, put everything on the other side, and you're done.
Oh, then I do. Okay, yeah.
All right.
So I fix any number here. This is a fixed number. Then it's positive or non-negative. And plus L0, so that's fix your radius. And that's your circle. Okay. So therefore, it's a circle cross R2 because this is completely arbitrary. There's no constraint at all. So this is the topology. So therefore, you can easily imagine what it is. Just take a solid torus and forget the boundary. That's what it looks like. Just take your solid torus And that's S1. And that's R2, the disk with the interior. Okay, so topologically, just open solid torus. And that's also true geometrically. Okay, it's not this way to see it, but as a change of coordinate. Okay, I have to confess, I tried before I came here trying to do the change of coordinate. I couldn't find it. So there's a change of coordinate so that you will see this space is S1 cross hyperbolic plane. Okay, so as a metric, this is also true. And that's why people draw this big cylinder. So physicists draw this way. This is an important picture. And this is hyperbolic plane. Okay, so it's a stack of hyperbolic plane. If I make this periodic, that's S1 plus D, R2, 2. Okay, so that's D2. So this is the Anton de Sitter space. And just so this is what really, you know, kind of interesting. And I think I want to say one thing, which I don't know anything that we neither wanted here to talk about, which is I won't write down the formula. So it's very explicit. If you just start from here, and you can write down another formula, and that's the so-called BTZ black hole. So it's another metric. And it's always topologically very simple. It's an orbit fold of this S1 cross D2, just a finite group action. And that's the black hole. And the reason this is so interesting is that in four dimension, if you study so-called black hole physics, which I don't really know, and there's something called the entropy, which is proportional to the area of the event horizon. And here, the same formula kind of works. And now the horizon is not a two-sphere, the horizon is a circle. And that's very important for analogy because it's a connected space. And so this is really almost as good as you can get for analogy to the real four-dimensional black hole. You have the four-dimensional quantum gravity. You have black hole. I have this entropy formula. So therefore, if you really want intuition, you can get lots of intuition. More importantly, this can be done analytically, mathematically, not like four-dimensional, extremely hard. So that's actually the reason that the black hole is important. You can also easily write down the formula for the metric. So now let me explain the specialty about three-dimensional gravity, which is why, in principle, this is doable. So the special thing is that in three dimension, I erased it. Oh, that's okay. So I don't think I need it. So in three dimension, I need this action. So so have this Einstein action. And what you can do is you can turn this into Chern-Simon theory. So the trick is the following. So this will be the talk next week, how to do it. So I will just outline what it is. So you take a closed three manifold. So this is a closed three manifold. I don't know if it has to be oriented or not, but let's not worry about it. And the three manifold has something called a tangent bundle. And it's a well-known fact if this is oriented. And then the tangent bundle is trivial. Which means it's really a product. But in mathematics, it's always important if it's trivial. You want to know if it's a canonical trivial, which means can you really trivialize this bundle in a unique way? The answer is no. And there are no canonical trivializations. So therefore, you need to choose a map from the tangent bundle to X3 cross R. Okay, you need to choose this thing, which basically means that for each tangent space, you need to choose a coordinate, e1, e2, e3, continuously. In topology, we call this a framing. And in gravity, has a very fancy name. I don't even know how to pronounce it. We can call this a Warbaum or something. But I think that's the wrong name, because this is for four dimensions. That's four legs. I think you want to make this into three legs. I think it's this word.
Okay, so that's the fancy thing, is it's just a trivialization of the tangent bundle.
One of my favorite words is when you get to 11 dimensions.
Oh, really?
It's Elfbein.
Okay. It's just right like this?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's, although it's a fancy word, it's just as simple as it's called framing. But the point is that now you want to make this into a dynamical variable. And then you can, if I take this knot, Riemannian, in real physics, I want it to be Lorentzian. And then you also want to choose omega, something called a spin connection. Again, I won't really bother because we have a talk come up in a week. Because what I just expressed is the general idea. So Einstein action is given by the gravitational field. And in classical gravity, you can change variable to a pair of a spin connection. And then this, I just call framing, because I can pronounce it, and that's also topology code. So you can change this from a metric to this pair, omega e. And that's your new dynamical variable. If you don't know physics, this is basically the same kind of a game. In physics, you say, oh, I want to write down the physics, use a position or use a momentum. It's your choice of variable. So that's a similar thing. You can use the gravitational field, or you can use this spin connection and this framing. You have a question? And then what you can do is you can put this together into omega e minus e zero. And this will become a SO22 gauge field. Okay. So just if you combine the two, you get it. So I think I rewrite this action in this new variable. But that's not what I want going to do. So I want to rewrite further. So I will form a new combination. So I will introduce a plus a minus, which is omega plus or minus e over l. Remember, l is this cosmological constant. And I choose L to be positive. If I choose this, and I rewrite this whole thing, and that's become some number over 4 pi, and the integral over the 3 manifold. I then trace A plus B A plus 2/3 A plus Q minus K, right, 4 pi, same thing, trace A minus, D A minus, plus 2/3, A minus Q. Okay. For those who are not seeing it, this is the famous transsignal action. This made a huge difference for my life, because I want to build a quantum computer using it. Okay, so that's the transsignal action. So the minus signs are also very important. So it says that if you rewrite this, 3D quantum gravity, classical gravity, is the same thing as two copies of transsignal theory. And there's a negative sign, so that means one copy is the mirror image of the other. And that's called double transsignal. So the claim is a classical gravity, 3D gravity, with negative is the same thing as double transsignal theory. And I should say the gravity is always pure, which means I don't have any matter or anything. It's completely space-time. Otherwise, you can add more things to it. So that says classical 3D gravity with a negative cosmological constant is equivalent to double transsignal theory. But there's an important subtlety, which is wherever you do something, there's always an equivalence relation. Okay? You know, here you need isometry, you need mod out.
And here you need to model out the so-called gauge transformation. And if your framing is invertible as this already is, and you can combine diffeomorphisms of the manifolds with those things so that you match up the equivalence relation. But once you go to quantum theory, and then you can do linear combination, then you will lose this invertibility. And then it's not clear quantum 3D gravity is the same thing as quantum double transaminal theory. And that's an important subtlety, which Witten admitted that's probably for his mistake in the paper we were going to go through, because that might change the quantum physics. But classically, that is true, that 3D gravity, pure gravity with negative cosmological constant, is the same as double transaminal theory. And then by general nonsense, if you do perturbative theory, it still works. So perturbatively, they are still okay, because perturbatively, quantum is still the same as classical. But
is it easy to see why scalar curvature gets turned into this transaminal term?
No, that's what I'd like somebody to show me. There's one thing I didn't say, which is this coupling constant. It's not random. So this coupling constant is 3G over 2L. And that's called the level of transaminal. I assume it's not too hard to compute. I look at Witten's paper. He didn't do using this, he used a differential form, and he did the computation. But my differential geometry sucks, so I cannot tell. So that's the claim. I also believe this is the guy who made the first of this, now Witten actually. He kind of rediscovered this. So now let me tell you why I'm interested in this. And so this is classical 3D gravity, pure 3D gravity. So now we want to ask, what is the quantum gravity? So now you can first ask, what do you mean by you have a quantum theory? Okay. So there are two meanings. So you have a quantum gravity. Quantum theory means that this is a standard thing. You write down this famous path integral. It mathematically does not make any sense. But physically, if you can make sense of this thing, and then you say, OK, you solve the quantum theory. Okay. So basically, this is one meaning of you solve this quantum theory, which means you make sense of this one. Mathematically, makes sense is one thing, but physics just means that you can manipulate to get good answers. Okay. So that's the meaning of a quantum theory. But we can propose a second way. What do you mean by solve this 3D quantum gravity? And this is the beginning of EDS-CFT. So if you draw the picture here, so that's the anti-de Sitter space. We take this thing here. And this is called the conformal boundary. This S1 cross R, the cylinder. This famous EDS-CFT says, if you have a well-defined quantum gravity, there should be a well-defined CFT on the boundary. Okay. That's the EDS-CFT says, it's one dimension lower. And then Witten said, if you solve this theory, it means that if you can find out which guy this one is, and that's also counted as you solve the theory. I don't see any true connection between the two, but this is what he claimed. It's a new meaning of solving 3D pure quantum gravity, is to find out which CFT is. To be fair, I think nobody knows. I think there are at least four possibilities. Witten proposed
This is related to the monster moonshine. But to me, that's too beautiful. And then the standard people think the corresponding CFT is an irrational Liouville theory. That's pretty standard. And of course, there's a possibility this is all wrong. And there's also people propose the CFT is a so-called Ising minimum model. Okay, so there are at least, I can see, four possibilities people written paper on. No, three written paper on. But I do think there's a possibility this doesn't make sense. So I think this is really open, and that's one reason I'm really interested, which is, you know, I remember, Alexis Pitayev, if you don't know him, he's not like a god. So I remember asking, he's working on black hole. I said, Alexis, you know, how do you know you get a good theory? And he said, I don't know. As long as mathematics are consistent, I'm happy. You will never find out if you get the right theory or not. I think that's probably true. Well, we cannot do experiments right now to say which one is really the right answer, but at least you need to be consistent. So that's actually what you mean by you solve quantum gravity. So my hope is that if you really can do this, then, well, what I hope is that we know a lot about this double transaminal theory. If you know this is true, you can learn a lot gravity from this side. And another thing we can do is maybe it's easier to work with transaminal theory than this gravitational thing. So anyway, so this is kind of the thing I really think is important. So now let me tell you if this is true, what we can deduce and would be interesting. So there are three things I think would be interesting to know. So this is mainly like why I'm interested rather than there are lots of people interested for different reasons. But so I'm a topologist. So suppose this is true. And then Witten suggests a very famous conjecture. He didn't write this way, but it's called the volume conjecture. Basically, this is suggested by this possibility. By this thinking about radio quantum gravity. So I will talk more about this later, so I will give you a statement afterwards. So that's probably I will spend most of the time after I talk about the general thing. So that's one interesting thing I will talk later. And then, suppose this really ADS CFT is true. In the sense we can make it mathematics. Physically, I don't think anybody has any doubt. And then, this actually gives me a really kind of interesting possibility in terms of computer science, which is the following. I don't know if you, pay attention to quantum computing, but if you really think about quantum computing, if you go to the definition, really quantum computing is a quantum mechanics computing. Okay, the whole model is based on quantum mechanics. And it's a general idea, I don't know who started first, but definitely Michael Friedman wrote this, which is if you have any physical theory, in principle, you can build a computer. Okay? It's just in principle, you know, that you can always do it. And there's always a question, which is, suppose you have a computer, a model, you can ask, how powerful is this computation model? Okay. So for classical physics, we have a famous Turing machine. Okay, that's just a classical computer. I mean, every desktop is principally a universal Turing machine. And for quantum mechanics, we have a quantum computing. Okay. And then if you go down to the next level, would be quantum field theory. Okay. And almost all experts believe there's nothing new. Okay. This is the same thing in terms of computer science. But nobody is even brave enough to guess what will happen for quantum gravity. So we really don't know what's the complication of quantum gravity. But if this is true mathematically, and there's a chance you can simulate 3D quantum gravity.
because what you can do is you can simulate the conformal field theory, and then you can simulate the equivalence. If you can simulate this efficiently, and then you can simulate the gravity. And that, I think, at least it suggests one way, which is probably there's no extra power. So it's a personal interest, which is I want to simulate almost everything using quantum computer. And the third thing is this theory, the 3D quantum pure gravity, is a topological theory. So it's also a topological quantum field theory. But this is beyond what we know. This is called irrational. That is, I would call irrational topological quantum field theory. And I'm always interested generalized topological quantum field theory. Basically, the same thing if you know conformal field theory is a rational conformal field theory, that will go beyond in a sense. So therefore, that would be a good thing to study, which is as the model for generalization. And then there's an interesting question you can think, which is the following. So if you think about this EDS-CFT, you have 3D quantum gravity physics called either bulk, means inside. And then you have conformal field theory on the boundary. Okay, that's called this the holographic principle. But I study 2KFT a lot. We also know in this dimension, if you have a CFT on the boundary, and you also have a TKFT in the bulk, that there are also correspondence. It would be hard to believe these two are not related. And that's, I almost started as related here, but most important thing I'm interested is the thing inside here most interesting is something called anions. And the thing inside here most interesting are the black holes. And it would be very surprising they have no relation with each other. So that's another personal interest. So there are other things, you know, people are interested. So that's actually to me what I can handle for 10 years. So anyway, I think I find it a very interesting thing to study. So finally, let me talk about real math, which is the Wolin conjecture suggested by this. So there's no really conjecture. I will just tell you what Witten said, and then everybody come up with his own version. And I will show you that I was always suspicious, actually, because people write down, I realize that cannot be right. So I will explain, it's a small observation, which is why this is still very interesting. So this is a Wolin conjecture. It's kind of become, I think it's kind of become the most famous conjecture in 3D topology, because after Pellman geometrization with Thurston, there's not really much left. I mean, big conjectures. Now this is one standing out as the very big conjecture because it's touched on the important problem, which is how classical world related to quantum world. So there are two cases, actually. So the first case is called Kashyev. They call Kashyev conjecture for hyperbolic knot. And I won't explain this version. This is a lot of people working on. And Kashyev actually said specifically in his paper, he was reading Witten's last paragraph. He just made his paragraph explicit. And that's a conjecture. Lots of people working on this. I remember like 10 years ago, oh, I don't know, 15 years ago, I was still only thinking about topology. My friends are very optimistic. They think, you know, they will prove this conjecture in the next years or two. Never happened. So it's still a conjecture. But the case I want to talk about is for a closed hyperbolic Riemann. Now that's the case actually, it's very tricky because there's I will show you that there's some subtlety about this conjecture. Okay, so first let me tell you a little bit about hyperbolic three manifolds. This is like, you know, the most spectacular progress for a long time
which is Thurston basically made a statement that almost every three manifolds is hyperbolic. So eventually this became a theorem. So this is the Pellman target Thurston, which is if you give me a three manifolds, I don't think either of them is actually. So give me a three manifold. And the complete theorem says you can cut this into pieces. Each piece has a geometric structure of one of the eight. But the most interesting geometry is hyperbolic geometry. So you can ask the question now, then, how do you know a three manifold has a hyperbolic metric? If you think about this, this is extremely hard. You give me an actual manifold, you want me to write down a metric, and the remaining curvature is minus one. You know, I did the R3 case, that's already hard, so how can you even think about to solve this? So, Thurston has this incredible insight, and Pellman finished it. He said, you don't need to know anything about geometry. I'm good enough. So, all you need to know is pi 1 has to be infinite. And it has to be irreducible. And it has to be a toroidal. Probably not fair. I will see what that means. If you give me a manifold, it just has to probably examine it. You discover, okay, has an infinite fundamental group, irreducible and irretoroidal. And then the theorem says, okay, you can write down one. Nobody probably can, but it exists. So infinite fundamental group, I think everybody knows what that means. If you that's infinite different classes of loops, you cannot contract to a point inside the manifold. Irreducible means that you cannot write your manifold into a connect sum over a two-sphere so that each piece is non-trivial. So this is not a connect sum of two pieces.
X not equal.
Yes. Okay. So that's how irreducible, which just means you cannot take something, just put them together. Pretty boring. It's a bit of a theorem, actually. You can basically take any manifolds and make it into a connect sum. And then this is called Knezia theorem. Then Milner observed that it's almost unique, the decomposition. It's just almost like a prime decomposition. Now, then this one's called toroidal, just says that there will be no embedded incompressible torus inside your manifold. So you cannot find a torus inside which is embedded so that no loop on this can be contracted inside the manifold. That's incompressible means. And that's completely algebraic too. It just says there's no embedded one so that pi 1 torus into pi 1 x is injected. That's the same thing as non-compressible surface, toroidal. And then theorem says if this is true, and then you have no, there's a hyperbolic structure. And if we know the existence, we always want to see some examples. So we can ask, you know, how do we really get examples? This is also Thurston's theorem. Thurston said you can construct lots of them by bin surgery on Gauss. Okay. There's another big theorem of Thurston, which is almost every knot is hyperbolic, which means that you give me any knot, if you take the knot complement, you can find a complete metric which is hyperbolic with finite volume. And it's very easy to recognize. Give me a knot, and Thurston said, as long as the knot, you cannot draw the torus, it's not a satellite, and then it's hyperbolic. It's incredibly beautiful. So the first hyperbolic, and then you can ask, you know, how many hyperbolic? I think it would take like a 14 crossing, up to 14 crossing, that there are probably 13, 14 million knots, and not hyperbolic, probably less than 100. So basically, it's really true, everything is hyperbolic. So the most famous knot, the first one, is the trefoil knot. This is not hyperbolic. this one can be drawn on the torus. It's a 2-3 torus knot. So this is knot. And then the next one, there's a good chance I draw the wrong picture, which I did indeed. This is the one. Now this is the famous figure eight. Now this one's hyperbolic. Now this was divided by, this was discovered by, I think it was Riley, Robert Riley. So it's in the 1970s. So Riley discovered the complement of this one has hyperbolic structure. He told Thurston, Thurston didn't believe it actually. Thurston thought it impossible, and then Thurston figured out, indeed it's true, not only true, everything is almost hyperbolic. That's the famous story. Thurston just look at the picture, and you can see the complement just two tetrahedron glued together. So that's this knot complement. So this is the famous hyperbolic knot. And if you want to construct hyperbolic knot, three manifold, and then Thurston said, you just take any hyperbolic knot, and then what you can do is, you can pick a solid torus complement. So just draw. Why is it goes the wrong way? Sorry, let's go the other way. If you just take out this piece of solid thing, that's called NK. You just take out this solid torus, delete the interior. And then you get S3 minus NK. And then take the boundary. And that's a torus. And then you can take this S3 minus the boundary. Union S1 plus a torus, solid torus. And then you give me a map phi. And this phi is a map from the torus to the torus. This is the boundary of S1 plus D2, and this is the boundary of S3 minus D. And that's called dense surgery. Okay. And just to imagine, you cut out this one, and then you take a standard solid torus, and you just re-glue back. So what's the point? The point is that there are many homeomorphic from torus to torus, which is not isotopic to the identity. And when you do this, let's change the manifold. Actually, another non-trivial theorem, but almost easy to see, is every three manifold can be obtained by dense surgery, not just on knot. You have three or more, few more components on links. Every three manifolds is dense surgery on links. And then another first and beautiful theorem is that if you give me a hyperbolic knot, like this one, and then dense surgery is parameterized by matrices like a PQRS in SL2Z. It turns out you don't need to remember all of them. All you need to remember is a pair. So people say PQ surgery. Okay. That's determined the class of manifolds. And then Thurston said, if you give me a hyperbolic knot, and there are infinite many dense surgeries you can do, but there are only finite many exceptional, which are not hyperbolic. So there are only finite many one hyperbolic. And this for this one, for figure eight, there are only 10 exceptions. And the conjecture is, except figure eight, the most you can get is 8. And the theorem is 12. So basic saying, if you give me a hyperbolic knot and then do arbitrary things, so you get a closed three manifold, still hyperbolic. So that's the example of things. And then now let me give you the best version of the volume conjecture. So, I will finish. So Witten says the following. If you give me a three manifold which is hyperbolic, you want to compute the partition function we just wrote down, this big nonsense thing. It does not exist, you know, this path integral, that's an invariant. But if you do something mathematical physicists always do when you study mathematically, which is this something called weak rotation, which means you take the Lorentzian metric, make it Riemannian,
And then he claimed that if you just think about physics, and they will grow exponentially like E to the volume of the three manifolds. There's a parameter, of course. Okay. So that's what he can see from quantum gravity. So therefore, if you can make this rigorous, and you can see that hyperbolic volume is purely classical. This is absolute quantum. And if you take a limit of a quantum, you should get this thing here. There's a parameter which I didn't put in, like this thing here, if you really want to be specific, there's a Planck constant. I want a Planck constant goes to zero. That's the physics says the classical world is the limit of a quantum world when Planck constant goes to zero. So we made this claim in the last paragraph. And then we want to write down, you know, how this really works. So let me write down a small observation which puzzles me, which is, so this is something I don't know the answer, but it's interesting to me, which is this one, the virtual waiting set. I consider this is a unitary irrational PQ of T's. Because it's supposed to be physics theory, so it should be unitary. And this is actually infinite dimensional because the following. So if you do the weak rotation, goes to Riemannian, and this will become a trans-Simon theory. And we do Lorentzian, your gauge group is SU22. And if you do the rotation, this goes to SO31. And locally, this is just SO2C. Okay. It's a non-compact group. Now, when it's not compact, it normally goes to irrational. Okay. And what I want to say, the last thing I want to say is that if you drop irrational, just say, can you formulate this using a unitary irrational PKP? And I claim this won't work. And here's the reason. So just quickly. So if you take this so-called SU2, level K, unitary PKPs. And then we can make sense of this partition function mathematically. And the partition function, so level k equals r minus 2, is some root of unity. And then this invariant has a bound given by d to the g minus 1 if this guy has heterogeneous g. And it's well known d equals, let me just write out, goes roughly at r to the 3rd power. And then the conjecture is supposed to be, if you look at this thing here, it says the log of the partition function, rather than the e there, and then this time constant goes to 0, means that you need to divide by r, and that goes to the hyperbolic volume. But if you look at this one, that's polynomial growth. And if you just get it, you get log r over r, when r goes to infinity, that goes to 0. There's no way you get exponential growth. So therefore, you cannot drop irrational. And then you can ask the question, can you drop unitarity? It's amazing. There is a strong evidence that might work, which is you get non-unitary QKFTs, and then the volume conjecture might be really true. There's a round of time, I just tell you this is. So there are two young guys. One is Tian Yang, he's a postdoc at Stanford. And then there's Qingtao Chen. So they wrote a paper which is. They didn't prove anything, but they just did numerics, so they just do computer simulation. So they took this this gravity goes to double trans-Simon theory, but if you really chase without this, you should go to a non SO22. Locally, this is same as SO2R plus SO2R. So this is not a good theory. So what you really want to do is you want to do this SO4, and then this gets SU2, and that can be done mathematically. So they took that theory, and then their incredible thing to say is that took a young non-unitary version, and then did lots of computer simulation, and this conjecture is true, actually. So log the partition function divided by R, 2 pi, goes to the volume, and R goes to infinity. And I was always a little bit suspicious of, you know, few examples, but then recently there's a big result, which I think is really give credit to this one. That this Japanese mathematician called Osuki. So he proved that if you take the figure A naught, do anything surgery, get a hyperbolic three manifolds, I think this conjecture is true. I think that's almost like as good as you can get for evidence. So now we have infinitely many hyperbolic three manifolds. This is true for a really strange phenomenon, non-unitary GFTs, but it's rational. I think I will stop here. And so I really found this very interesting, although I'm not an expert on this whole fine branch, but I'm interested in learning this portion. Okay, I will stop here.
Any questions?
Excuse me, so what metric do you take in the function of Vx?
Oh, you integrate over all of them.
Why do you say that's a finite number?
No, they are not in general. That's, if the theory is supposed to be solvable, means that you will make it a finite number. Not by taking this one, but find a different way.
So I mean, in their simulation, they also define another way?
Yeah, okay, so the history is the following. So you write out this path integral.
Yeah.
And normally, this is considered to be one of the greatest open problems, which is people consider this as the next calculus problem, which is how to make sense of this. So that's the math job, to make sense of this infinite dimensional integral. But the way it works is not to make sense of this right now. The way it works is that this is a physical theory, so they have formal properties. Okay. They deduce the formal property for assume this is the thing. And then you find another construction which fulfill all those axioms. And then you declare that's a mathematical realization of this one. And that's exactly what happens for compact D-group. So if you take a compact D-group, the trouble with this theory is that all those real D-group is not compact. But if you do SU2, there are two ways to do it. One is you do elementary like a Jones, just draw diagrams. And then there's a famous Dreyfus polynomial group. You can use that to make everything rigorous for the compact people. So that's give you the whole subject of TPFTs, rational conformal field is the same thing. So this is just the, I didn't even write down the formula that should be supposed to be some kind of infinite measure there. And the whole point is this one does not, like this space is pretty simple. This is a contractible infinite dimensional affine space. The trouble is this one. And it's not well defined. Actually, more troublesome is this has symmetry, and you need a metric to with respect to symmetry. Now, the only thing we can do probably now is some sigma models or something. This is too difficult for right now, maybe for next millennium.
So we just say that Vx is some topological invariant?
Those can be constructed in a different way. They are topological invariant. And that's like I'm teaching. One reason I'm writing this seminar is because I'm teaching another class, which is exactly doing this. We just define those mathematically.
Since you take one weak rotation, why not do another?
Even Witter didn't know the answer, which is you rotate the base. What do you do with the gauging group? He does not know how you should rotate. You know, he wrote a paragraph just saying he does not know, you know, you should rotate to this one. Seems to me, I don't know, you know, I want to rotate to SO4. It's just that the weak rotation only does space-time. For gauge fields, you can rotate, you cannot rotate, I don't know.
Any more?
Yeah?
Okay, maybe this is a very basic question. X on the left, Z of X doesn't have it doesn't have a metric yet. You integrate over all metrics, right?
There's a metric. When I say the metric is hyperbolic, you specific, like this is a mathematical sloppiness. We mean that you have a metric has constant second curvature minus 1.
That's what I mean when I say hyperbolic. So you always choose one. And that's why this has a volume. And this volume is with respect to that metric. And then there's a big theorem called loss of rigidity. So that's a topological invariant. It's not a geometric invariant. So that's why this is topological. And there's a famous loss of rigidity, which tells you that if your hyperbolic manifolds are homotopic, they're isometric.
So that really is a topological invariant.
It's a topological invariant. So if you take any hyperbolic thing, if you specify the curve, the surface will be minus one, and then the volume becomes a topological invariant.
Thank you.